Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Friday, March 24th, 2017. The time is 9:02 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me at the table this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
We do have a quorum to conduct business. We have a few people that are away on other state business right now. We should be joined shortly by Senator Von Imhoff, who was in a meeting with me just a few minutes ago. And Senator Michicki is on other state business and will be arriving shortly. On today's agenda, we have Senate Bill number 66, an act redesignating the Alaska State Council on Arts as a public corporation and government instrument of the state, defining the powers and duties of the Alaska State Council on the State of Art, Council on the Arts, providing exemptions from certain statutes for the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and making conforming amendments and providing for an effective date. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite Senator Hughes and her staff, Joshua Banks, to the table for introduction of Senate Bill 66.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Shelley Hughes, Senator to District F, Palmer and Chugiak. Delighted to be here and thank you for hearing the bill today. SB 66 is an important thing for consideration when we think of the environment and the fiscal climate that we're in at this time, Madam Chair, because it will allow the Alaska State Council on the Arts to quasi-privatize, to allow them to more readily leverage non-state funding. And that's an important interest. In fact, they have been approached by private funders in recent times, and because of the structure, the way it is, they're limited. So I think it's an important thing for this legislative body to consider. It would one of the changes from their current structure would include exemption from the state procurement code. And one of the reasons why, as education chair, I think this is important, because part of the work that the State Council on the Arts does is to come into the schools, and the more private funding they can leverage, the more they'll be able to do in our schools. And so that is one of my passions and the reason the Senate Education Committee agreed to carry this bill. If they can bring in private funding, that is a good thing at this time. I also want to just put on the record before Joshua, if you'd like, you can do a sectional analysis, is that when we had the bill in the Senate Education Committee, it happened to be a time when two of my three staff had the flu, and we were working on a CS, and because of the flu and the scheduling, we were not able to bring that forward, but we did have provided that to the chair for your consideration, and that is changing the membership from 11 to 9. It might not save in the hundreds of thousands, just in the thousands, but I think over time, the recommended size of a board is 9 to 11, so I think 9 is reasonable. We looked, there are other states who have their state art council boards at the number 9, so I just suggest that you consider that. We also we're going to add something that would have required the council to report to the legislature next year, a five-year plan on reducing their reliance on state funding by 50%. So I just wanted to mention that because that probably would have come forward to you had we not had a bout of the flu. So, Madam Chair, if you'd like, Joshua Banks is available to go through the bill, the mechanics, if you'd like.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Are there questions to Senator Hughes before we do the sectional? Mr. Banks, if you could walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Joshua Banks, staff to Senator Hughes. And today I'll be going over the sectional analysis for Senate Bill 66. And before I start, Madam Chair, I'll note that Ben Brown, the chair of the council, is behind me, and Andrea Noble-Pallant is online to answer any questions that the committee has. Starting Section 1, it'll include the executive director and all employees of the Arts Council that as employees that are exempt from the State Personnel Act under AS 3925. Section 2 will allow artist submissions for Arts Council funding to be exempt from public records requests under AS 40-25-120A, and as we'll see later on in the bill, this confidentiality is temporary only while the Board of Trustees considers the submission for funding. Section 3 repeals and reenacts AS 44-27-040 by setting up the Arts Council as a public corporation. The Arts Council will remain within the Department of Education and Early Development. Section 4 establishes that the Council will now be a Board of Trustees. This section also creates new requirements for the board membership so that they must represent the literary arts, and that instead of members just having an interest in art, they must have an expertise in the arts. Section 5 makes similar changes by substituting the term members for trustees, council for board of trustees, and adding the literary arts to the type of groups and associations that should be consulted when the governor is making appointments to the council. Section 6 changes the term member to trustee. Section 7 also changes the term members of the council to trustees and changes the language regarding the council's ability to pay per diem and reimburse travel costs to include the statutory reference of AS 39-2180, and this is a section that allows the Arts Council to receive the same amount of per diem and travel cost reimbursements as other state boards and commissions. Section 8 changes the terminology under AS 44-27-045 to be gender-neutral, and also changes members of the council to trustees and council to board of trustees. Section 9 creates new duties for the Arts Council to promote the literary arts, encourage the investment in all of the arts, and conduct research on artistic and cultural activities. Section 10 substitutes the term education for strategic in order to reflect the role of the Arts Council and that it involves more than just educational objectives. Section 11 changes the terminology under AS 44-27-054 to use gender-neutral terms and changes the term council to trustees. This section also makes a conforming amendment to the exemption to the State Personnel Act in Section 1. Section 12 adds a new section to AS 44-27 for how the Arts Council will be administered. Subsection A will allow the Board of Trustees to manage the Council's assets and adopt, amend, and repeal bylaws and regulations pertaining to the Council. Subsection B will allow the Board to hire an Executive Director to supervise the administration of the corporation, and the Council already does have an Executive Director, which is Andrea Noble-Blant. Subsection C exempts the Council from the State Procurement Code, but it requires the Council to adopt their own code, and it also requires them to include a veteran's preference that is consistent with AS 3630-321F. Subsection D requires that the Council's operating budget be subject to the Executive Budget Act under AS 3707. Section 13 of the bill requires the Council to comply with 20 U.S.C. 951 through 960, which is titled the National Foundation on the Arts and Humanities Act of 1965. And this requires the state to provide matching funds for any funds received by the National Endowment of the Arts. Section 14 creates new subsections under AS 44-27-060. Subsection E will allow for an artist's submission to the Council to be confidential and not subject to a public inspection or disclosure under the Public Records Act. Under subsection F of this section, any submission that is confidential will no longer be confidential if the Council awards a commission to the artist. If no commission is awarded, the Council will notify the artist and return the submission. G provides that if an artist's submission is a work made for hire, or if the artist has transferred the copyright, the confidentiality provisions of this section do not apply. Section 15 creates definitions for the Board of Trustees, being the Board of Trustees for the Alaska State Council of the Arts, and for the term council as meaning the Alaska State Council of the Arts. Section 16 creates transition language for the following areas of the Arts Council. First, current council members will now be on the Board of Trustees. Current employees will remain working with the council. Regulations, contracts, rights, liabilities, and obligations created under current law will remain in effect. And finally, the Arts Council as a corporation will retain records, equipment, appropriations, and other property currently held by the council. And finally, Section 17 will create an effective date to be July 1st, 2017. And with that, I'm happy to answer any committee questions.
Are there questions on the structure of the bill? Senator Hughes.
Yeah, I just would like to make another comment because I mentioned two of the things that we had intended to do before the flu hit our office. And one I failed to mention was on page 10, and that is the reference in Section 13 to the National Foundation on the Arts and the Humanities Act of 1965. As we talked to those in the Art Council, that section really is not necessary. And there is concern, too, when if you refer to something at that given time and then something changes in that, it gets confusing. They have to comply in order to receive those funds. So that section is actually not necessary. So the Senate Finance Committee, Madam Chair, might consider whether you want to leave that in or take that out. And then the other thing that I failed to mention was in my opening comments about the possibility of moving from 11 to 9 members of the board makeup is one of the reasons they like having a larger members, so they have folks from around the state that can attend events and to be ambassadors. So we came up with a concept, and they could do this anyway. It wouldn't have to be in the statute, but as an official designation, they could have regional ambassadors. They would not be traveling back and forth, so there'd be no cost, but they would have could be an official regional ambassador for the Arts Council that could provide that function of being at various events around the state. In fact, they could even have more coverage that way, and so that is something that we were considering as well, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Welcome, Senator Von Imhoff. Mr. Banks, I have a question. If we're creating trustees, does that mean that there will be a different appointment process for the council? Could you tell me what the current process is for the board appointees? And if you don't have that at your fingertips, I'll wait until Mr. Brown is at the table.
Madam Chair, for the record, Joshua Biggs, that would be an excellent question for Mr. Brown.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chair. Is there ever a time in the future where the corporation can be totally privatized? And if so, when? If not, why?
Madam Chair, when Benjamin Brown comes up, he can speak to that. Right now, they are required to have state funding in order to be eligible for the federal funding. There was a state that tried to use other non-state funds, and they became ineligible. There is discussion about the National Endowment of Art funding in our nation's capital at this time, so it's possible there could be some changes to that might allow that. But our recommendation was that they develop a 5-year plan on how to reduce their reliance by 50%, and if federal law changed, perhaps that could be changed to 100%.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good Chair. Also, was per diem removed and travel reimbursement substituted, or how is the per diem and remuneration going to be dealt with in the bill?
Mr. Banks.
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, and Ms. Blunt could confirm this, but in Section 7 on page 8, we deal with the per diem and travel reimbursements. My understanding is that's just a rewording to make it consistent with the restructuring of the council to be a corporation.
Senator Dunleavy, if we hold that question, maybe we'll. Is there any other questions of the sponsor of the bill? Thank you for joining us this morning. If I could invite, we have some invited testimony. Mr. Benjamin Brown from the Alaska State Council on the Arts, if you could join us at the table.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and good morning. For the record, Benjamin Brown, Chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. My pleasure to be here this Friday morning with the Senate Finance Committee to answer some of the questions that were asked first before there may be other ones, Madam Chairman. Senator Dunleavy's question about full privatization would not be possible under federal law at the current time. The National Foundation on the Arts and Humanities Act requires that recipients of National Endowment for the Arts funds be state agencies and that there be a state appropriation to match each dollar of the amount that's set out in our three-year partnership agreement. So to return to Senator Hughes's suggestion that we look at some ways to augment our earned income, we're happy to do that, but we are not going to get to 50%. Our appropriation right now is just under $700,000, and I cannot imagine any set of circumstances, as much as I would like to see us successfully earning income through artistic activity, where we would bring in $350,000 a year. That stated, you are, I believe, Madam Chairman, and the members of the committee are probably aware that we're going to have an arts license plate program from legislation that Senator Stoltz and Representative Price Tompkins got through last legislature. That'll generate some income. California makes a lot in its license plate program, but we're not California, we're Alaska. So I just don't see that happening. And another area that's come up, just so you know, we have a contemporary art bank. Many of your offices may have pieces of artwork from the Alaska Contemporary Art Bank. Actually, Representative Gaddis in the last legislature wanted us to look at the possibility of doing some private renting of the art from the art bank. Frankly, in the current economic climate, I don't know that private sector companies in Alaska are going to be beating down our door to rent artwork from us right now. But again, in the long run, totally a possibility. So we remain open, Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, to ways to augment our earned income. But we're right now it would be illegal federally to go to full privatization, and frankly, 50% isn't realistic. But the sky's the limit, and we're happy to, you know, look at possibilities for doing that. I'm trying to think what other questions you had had. Madam Chairman, Senator Dunleavy had asked about the per diem terms. My understanding is, as well, that's just new conforming language. That's the way that per diem for boards and commissions ought to be described in statute now. It's not a change in any way, shape, or form from the current practice.
Mr. Brown, I asked a question about how current board members are appointed and what process they go through and if the process changes as we switch to the word trustee.
And Madam Chairman, in response to that question, no. The nomenclature change from council to trustee is necessary to reflect the fact that the council would become a board of trustees of a corporation with the fiduciary duties that are attached to that role, which is a heightened amount of duty for the members. But the selection process, which is that people express their interest to the governor's office of boards and commissions, his staff vet those names, interview people, and decide whom the governor is going to appoint, that would remain exactly the same going forward. It would just be council members being referred to as trustees of the board of trustees. But otherwise, everything would remain quite the same.
Mr. Brown, do the list of boards, does that come before the legislature then?
No, Madam Chairman. Our council members are not currently subject to legislative confirmation, and the bill would not change that process. So we serve at the pleasure of the governor.
Mr. Brown, if you're becoming a trustee, we may want you to be confirmed by the legislature. So that's why I was asking the question.
And, Madam Chairman, it's a perfectly valid point. And to go back to the number of trustees issue, I serve on the board of the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies, which is a consortium of the arts agencies from all states and jurisdictions, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and Alaska, of course. So we have the benefit of the resources from NASA, with two A's, not the space agency, as the council spent the better part of the last year crafting this bill. And we've looked at the way these things are done in other states, and we very carefully considered all 11 members of the council and our staff whether or not we wanted to change to a larger or smaller board, if we wanted to have legislative confirmation, if we wanted to have designated legislative seats. In the state of Washington, there's a member of the House and Senate minority on the council. So, I mean, every state does it differently. This is truly an example of the states being laboratories. The only hard and fast rule is the state has to match the federal appropriation dollar for dollar. But upon reconsideration, we seem to think that, you know, I've been on the council for almost 14 years and I've been the chairman for 10. Things are working pretty well, and my fellow council members thought that as well. So we have not seen any problem with a lack of legislative confirmation. We've had good, hardworking, dedicated members who've expressed their interest in serving, and we've had governors who've carefully chosen among the people who put their names forward, and I think we've got a pretty good bench of people who are working on these projects. So back to the issue of numbers of members, the smallest councils are 9. There's nothing smaller than 9 in any of the states or jurisdictions, and only 4 states have 9 members. Some states, Connecticut has like 24, which seems kind of big for a state like Connecticut, but as people have said elsewhere in this building, this isn't Connecticut, this is Alaska. My concern about going down to 9 members is having 11 members provides more opportunity for the governor to find people from a variety of communities across the state that can bring their expertise and their geographical perspectives to our work.
Mr. Brown, do you have an attendance record at the council to know whether you've had any problems in establishing quorums when you get together?
Madam Chairman, I don't have a typed up spreadsheet report, but I mean, as the chairman, I think the only meeting I've missed was after my father passed away last December, and I had our vice chairman, Kes Woodward of Fairbanks, chair one meeting. And in my entire time, I think that's the only meeting I've ever missed. And I cannot think of a single council member over time that has been problematic in the sense where I felt like I had to call that person up and say, hey, you need to start showing up at the meetings or anything of that nature.
Mr. Brown, let me restate my question. Have you had trouble establishing a quorum?
Absolutely not, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Absolutely not.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brown, trustees, so do the trustees, will they get training? Because now they'll be acting in a fiduciary capacity, so can you talk to me about that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Bishop, I think we would probably reach out to our attorneys at the Department of Law and maybe have them do at least a primer for the council members about what the fiduciary duties of being a trustee of a public corporation are in a manner that differs from being a council member. I don't think it's going to be a steep learning curve because we do have people that have been on the council for the most part for a little while, but I certainly think that's a good idea if we're able to get this bill enacted this year, that by teleconference at our meeting this summer, and we only get to return to the issue of the expense of travel, with the new travel restrictions, we only get one in-person meeting a year anyway. But I would try to, if possible, have somebody at that meeting as well to make sure, and as the committee may know, I am an attorney and a member of the Alaska Bar, so I'm happy to use whatever resources I personally have at my disposal to make sure that the council members are brought up to speed in their new capacity as trustees, because there would be some difference, and that's why I mentioned the fiduciary duty that attaches.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, you've been answering our questions. Do you have some comments for us considering Senate Bill 66?
Yes, Madam Chairman. Thank you. We're very grateful to Senator Hughes and the Senate Education Committee for sponsoring this legislation. As you may know, the House Education Committee has sponsored a companion bill on the other side of the building. And we are grateful that the committees chose to do that because we think that that reflects a statement that we're pleased to be located administratively in the Department of Education and Early Development. We really thought seriously about that, and Senator Dunleavy, I'm gesturing to, because you know we've actually spoken to him about that in the budget context. In other jurisdictions, most arts councils have moved to their departments of commerce. They've tried to become economic development agencies. And we kind of weighed the potential pluses and minuses, and we have a good working relationship with the Department of Education, and education is among the most important things that we do. You know, making sure that Alaskan students have access to the arts is integral to what we do. It's also integral to our foundation partnerships with the Rasmussen and the Margaret A. Cargill Foundations. If those educational opportunities are what has really drawn some of the greatest interest from private funders into the work of the State Council on the Arts. So it was a choice to remain in the Department of Education. It was a choice to remain an 11-member council. And then some of the other things that Mr. Banks walked through, the procurement code was one of the drivers of this legislation because it really has hamstrung the council in operating efficiently and spending some of this foundation money to do some beneficial programs and work. And we just didn't see the need for that. One of the examples, I think, that we drew from as we were considering this legislation was the Children's Trust and how very hard it was for the Children's Trust to operate as a line state agency before significant reforms were done that enabled it to do a much better job expending money on behalf of its intended purpose. So the bill really does represent the better part of a year of thought and analysis by all the council members, some good outside advisors, and so it comes to you in a form that we're very supportive of. I have the greatest respect for Senator Hughes and for her staff, and the idea, you know, we're the arts council, so we're always open to ideas. We're always open to imagination and thinking outside the proverbial box. But at the same time, I think it might be penny wise and pound foolish to downsize from 11 to 9 at this point, when our staff, just so you know, has gone from 6.5 to 4.5 over the past couple of years with the hiring freeze. One of our administrative people has been plucked away to the new Division of Shared Services. How effective that's going to be for them, I don't know, because it was a vacant position when it got moved. So I don't even think it's been filled yet. But basically, we now have four full-time staff and a half-time contractor running the Contemporary Art Bank. So I think that also militates against downsizing from 11 to 9 at this point, when those 11 members need to be there as working trustees and council members to help kind of maximize the potential impact that the agency has on Alaskans' lives. So certainly we will do whatever the legislature decides is in the best interest of the council, but at this point I would probably recommend against taking that step, at least till we're able to transition to the new form of being a public corporation and instrumentality and seeing how that works. We have four members whose council terms are up this June. They run on the fiscal year. And we might see some people that aren't interested in being reappointed. We might see some new people come in expressing interest to the governor. So I would prefer to keep the current size as we transition into this new model. And we can always come back in a future legislature. Other than that, there has been some discussion about things going on in our nation's capital, which is obviously makes perfect sense. I talk to Senator Murkowski's staff pretty much every week about where things are regarding the National Endowment for the Arts, and she is an advocate for the continued existence of the agency. So, for that matter, are Senator Sullivan and Congressman Young. And Congressman Young, as any of you who followed politics in Alaska knows, has not always been that way. And I think he's come around to appreciate the leveraging effect that 40% of the money appropriated to the National Endowment for the Arts has to go to the state arts agencies, where it's automatically matched dollar for dollar, and then in turn matches local government is matched by local governments, individual donors, and private foundations. And so I think that leveraging effect is one of the things that is probably going to serve to help prevent the elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts, because most federal agencies can't claim to do that. You know, most federal appropriations are just that. I mean, capital money is different, but for operating things, you just get the federal money, and then it is what it is. In the NEA's case, it's a 7 or 8 time return on the dollar for those monies being appropriated in our nation's capital. So, again, things are in a tremendous state of progress and transition in our nation's capital, but I'm pretty confident that the NEA is going to continue to exist and be there as a partner for the State Council on the Arts going forward. And I certainly plan to remain as involved as I need to be to achieve that outcome. So I could go on at great length, and I don't want to do that because there may be other questions the committee has. And I also know that one of our council members, Alice Bioff, is at the Legislative Information Office in Nome, and I know she wanted to testify if she could have that opportunity. And then Andrea Noble-Palanta, our executive director, also, I think, may have a few words to say and certainly would be able to answer questions that the committee members may have, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are the board appointments staggered? Normally we see that in the legislation, and are they staggered appointments currently, and why aren't they so designated in this particular piece of legislation?
Mr. Brown.
Madam Chairman, Senator Hoffman, they are staggered, and so there's four up this year, and then there would be three and three up. And then I think we're off by one because someone resigned and then had to have a term filled. But generally speaking, it's 3, 3, 3, and 2 is the way they rotate. That's currently on the roster if you look at the Governor's Boards and Commissions webpage. And I think with the transitional language, because current council members would become trustees serving their existing terms, that staggering would persist. But certainly if we wanted to put it in the bill, we could do so. But they are staggered right now, and they would continue to be under the transitional language is my understanding.
Senator Hoffman, thank you. Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Brown, for my reference, you made reference to NEA twice in your last comment. Could you be clear on which NEA we're talking about?
Madam Chairman, Senator Bishop, yes. The National Endowment for the Arts.
Thank you.
Not the National Education Association.
Thank you.
Mr. Bishop, you were reading my mind.
And Madam Chairman, I apologize for that. We actually had one council member many years ago who just kept thinking I was talking about the National Education Association. So I should, and acronyms are always the double-edged swords. So the National Endowment for the Arts.
Mr. Brown, there has been, we've received some contact in my office around the 1% for art period, both in our state and how that's accumulating at a national level. Can you talk to me about how 1% for art is being utilized in Alaska and how specifically the issue was raised that we are bringing people, we're paying for foreign artists to bring art to Alaska. And there has been some friction regarding that. So if you could put on the record the process that that the council uses to select an artist and how that comes about, there is interest from the people of Alaska and how that's happening and how local artists are being bypassed for either national or international artists.
Madam Chairman, yes. The percent for art statute is part of our enabling statute. We do not get the money. It's not part of our budget. When there is a capital project, percent for art provides that 1% of the cost of that project be set aside for artistic enhancements and attributes to the project. The role that we provide, and Andrea Noble-Pallant, our executive director, previously for a decade was the program director for visual and literary arts. So she administered the percent for art program. So I'm quite certain that if I misstate anything, she will come right in and clean up what I've misstated. But basically, we provide the administrative expertise to convene a panel to help the agency that is building whatever is being built, a school, a crime lab, whatever other public building it might be, and we help them come up with a merit-based process that puts out to bid the opportunities for the Percent for Art project, given the constraints of the overall budget. People make submissions. The panel considers, again, what is appropriate, what's good for the project, what's not going to go over budget, what's not going to be a deferred maintenance problem going forward, and then it recommends that the agency that's building the project let the bid out for the Percent for Art component to a particular artist. Now, I guess in a way it would be nice if we could say only Alaskans can apply for those bids, but I think that would run afoul of the Privileges and Immunities Clause. If you're an artist in another state, you know, the right to work is important, and we've seen this in the commercial fishing industry. We've seen it in a whole host of other places. So we've never attempted to deny any opportunity to non-Alaskans. We don't aggressively solicit outside the state of Alaska. But at some point in time, someone who's not an Alaskan is going to put a bid in that is the most favorable to the panel, and that panel is going to decide this person is the best artist. If you go down to Harborview Elementary School here in Juneau, there's a really lovely piece called Raindrops, and that was done by a non-Alaskan artist. But, you know, within those strictures, we certainly, I think like any other state agency, want to do whatever we can within the bounds of the law to encourage that Alaskans get these pieces. Now, you mentioned international artists, Madam Chair, and there are some pieces that have been designed by Alaskan artists, but the actual pieces have been made in Germany because that's where the glass-making manufacturing expertise exists to fulfill that artist's vision. So just because the glass comes from Germany doesn't mean it's a German piece of artwork. It can be an Alaskan artist who came up with the concept. So I think for anyone listening, for those who've contacted your office, there are certain limits in what we could do as an agency to benefit Alaskan artists. And I think by promoting the possibilities as widely in Alaska, it's sort of a demand side way. You know, if we let the demand, when there is demand for percent for art projects, be as widely advertised as possible in Alaska, that's going to naturally lead to a higher proportion of Alaskans getting those bids successfully. So I hope that answers the question. I guess I would say, as far as percent for art goes generally, a percent of nothing is nothing, and capital budgets have been pretty close to nothing lately. So we've had a very low level of activity with percent for art, but we want the program to remain in place for that time in the future when I think we can all agree Alaska is going to get its fiscal house in order, and we're going to have more robust capital budgets and more resource development to pay for more projects, thus creating these artistic opportunities for Alaskan artists.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Welcome, Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Mr. Brown?
I just have one question.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So I'm reading, I think it was Andrea, yeah, wrote this letter back in March, and she said that the Senate Bill 66 will provide ASCA the flexibility to manage fast flow projects in a timely manner and help us to work across sectors such as health, economic development, tourism, transportation around the state. Why is that not available now? Why do we need this vehicle to be able to do that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Von Imhoff, it's not that it's not available now, but it's more a matter of the fact that the procurement code places more red tape barriers in our way than need to be there that makes it slower for us to do things. A really good example is helping injured servicemen and servicewomen. Creative Forces is a new initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts. In conjunction with the Department of Defense, and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson has been selected as one of the new expansion sites for Creative Forces. It was originally pioneered at the Walter Reed Army Hospital, the National Intrepid Center of Excellence, and Fort Belvoir in our national capital area. And Creative Forces, there's some money that we don't have to match. The good news is the money that's coming to help us do Creative Forces does not require a dollar-for-dollar match from this legislature, which relieves me in these fiscal times. But that money has to go somewhere. And if it were to come to us in our current form, we could only expend it in strict compliance with the state procurement code. So Americans for the Arts, which is an arts advocacy organization, is going to be serving as a middleman between the National Endowment for the Arts and the Alaska State Council on the Arts as we undertake this project. That probably wouldn't be necessary if this legislation were to go into effect. So that's one example of where there's an opportunity for some funding that we don't want to have to take in a manner that we're going to find it difficult to expend. We try to do convenings, and of course travel is something that is more of a luxury now than it has been in the past, but the last time we had a biennial arts conference, we were told that the one of the speakers coming up to address the people at the conference and give them some good professional training about how to be a successful working artist and small businessmen and women was told that she had to have a home insurance policy on her residence outside because that was part of the procurement code. And that just is kind of asinine. I mean, why would you need to have a home insurance policy to make sure that you can come and present to our arts conference in Anchorage? It just didn't make any sense. But those are the sorts of, again, red tape sorts of rules that we've been told we need to comply with. And we just want to try to give ourselves flexibility so that problems like that don't even come up. When we find a possible funder for a worthy program, we're able to go and partner with that funder, get good things done, and not have to expend scarce staff time on such problems.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Von Imhoff, follow-up? Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
I just was going to thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brown, I think maybe Section 12, page 10, what that allows for us to deal with outside the state procurement code for veterans, as you made your examples to Joint Base Elmendorf and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Madam Chairman, that was put in because we wanted to make sure that if we're exempt from the state procurement code, which has a veteran's preference, that our self-adopted procedures would also have that preference. It's more of a preventative measure to make sure that we're not backsliding and helping veterans than being a proactive measure to go out. But frankly, the idea of veterans are going to be involved as the recipients of the services in the Creative Forces program, but and not to go too long about it, but one of the visions of Creative Forces is to have a community aftercare element so that when the acute needs of an injured serviceman or a servicewoman with post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury is no longer being seen in an inpatient context, that there is a community arts partner out there in the community to help them continue and their families continue to heal and be productive members of society. And frankly, if we could find a way to find a veteran who is the provider of that community arts element to the veterans who are being treated, I would love to have veterans on both sides of that transaction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, that brings up and highlights, then do we have an Alaska bidder's preference in this bill? If you're adopting a veteran's preference, I just posed a question about why Alaskan artists aren't being selected at a higher frequency rate, at least posed by some. You've acknowledged the veteran's preference, so should we include an Alaska bidder's preference?
Madam Chairman, I can see no good reason why that would not be nicely inserted into that same subsection of 4427055. It would seem like that would be a good place to put on the record that that's the policy of the State Council on the Arts to try to benefit Alaskans to the maximum legal possible extent.
Thank you. Senator, thank you, Mr. Brown, for joining us today. Senator Machicki, did you want to put on the record? I know that you've been taking care of other state business.
Oh, I can, Madam Chair. I don't like to miss finance meetings. I was participating in Hillcorp's exercise this morning dealing with their pipeline leak in Cook Inlet, which is important in my district. Well, it's important in the state. Just wanted to let you know why I was late for finance.
Thank you. We did say that you were on other state business. Thank you for doing that. Is there any other questions for Mr. Brown? Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you very much for your presentation. I did go through some of the letters here, as well as I'm familiar with the State Council of the Arts. I just wanted to state for the record that I do sit on both the Rasmussen Foundation and the Atwood Foundation. Both foundations over the years have provided financial support to the Alaska State Council of the Arts. I am happy to see this change. I think that if you can leverage money quicker, more nimbly, with more flexibility, that will benefit your grantees. And but I did want to state for the record that I do have a affiliation, if you will. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
The next invited testimony is Alice Bioff. Alice is a council member. Alice, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Senate Finance. Do you have comments on SB 66 for the committee?
Yes, I do. And Honorable Committee Chair and committee members, good morning. My name is Alice Bioff, resident of Nome, Alaska, currently employed at COWARIC and an Alaska State Council on the Arts Council member. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify in support of SB 66. I am testifying today in my capacity as an ASCA council member. I am a tribal member of the Native Village of Koyuk and grew up there and here in Nome. My family and I have lived in Nome for the last 17 years. For much of that time, I have been employed by COWARIC, the regional Native nonprofit consortium of tribes for the Bering Straits region, as a business planning specialist. Through our work here at COWARIC, I am honored and privileged to work with artist entrepreneurs within our communities. We provide direct technical assistance, offering tools and resources to assist artists continue their work so that they can sustain themselves, their families, and their communities. It is through this work that I have seen firsthand how important it is for these artists who live in communities with very few resources and infrastructure to grow their businesses through opportunities such as those that become available through ASCA and others. Artist entrepreneurs are economic development drivers in their communities, and the Alaska State Council on the Arts supports these communities through their work and advocacy. With their partnerships, resources, and programs, we see a bright future and growth opportunity to support all artists across the state. Through the restructuring initiative, we see ASCA services continued and strengthened to support the artists through improved ability to react to funding opportunities and better represent, support, and advance the artists by offering the tools and services needed to strengthen an already existing and important economy. This is critical to strengthening and sustaining our rural communities in this fiscally challenging time. SB 66 streamlines the process ASCA will use to present opportunities to artists all over Alaska, including those artists we have worked with for years here in the Bering Straits region. From my perspective, this will be a great benefit to all artists, including those in rural Alaska. I also want to add regarding the suggestion of downsizing the ASCA trustee board from 11 to 9, I do not support this action. The benefits do not outweigh the negative impact that this will have across the state of Alaska. Our state consists of many beautiful regions and cultures, both urban and rural. Minimizing the number of trustees on the board potentially means cutting a voice and ability to advocate for a particular sector of the arts community. Limiting this diverse representation of our state, this is potentially a pretty severe impact for the benefit of a few hundred dollars saved. We are a volunteer board. As volunteer advocates, which is another reason to seriously reconsider minimizing the number of trustees on the board, each and every one of us bring a unique perspective to the table and contribute not only our diverse experiences, but ability to come together and bring with us an understanding of our communities. That ground-level information and insight is vital to adequately represent and advocate for the arts statewide. As a direct example, I am also part of the Arts Education Advisory Subcommittee, also putting in hours of collaboration, bringing knowledge and insight from our region to the group. The potential of losing that voice is chilling. Please reconsider cutting the number of trustees and keep the ASCA board at 11 members. It works. and thank you for your time.
Thank you for joining us online, Alice. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, the next invited testimony is from Andrea Noble Pallant. Andrea is the executive director. Andrea, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Honorable committee chairs and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of SB 66 today. My name is Andrea Noble Pallant. I'm executive director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and I have worked for this agency for 11 years and in the arts sector for almost 30 years. If I may, Madam Chair, I would like to add an additional comment to your question regarding the Percent for Art program.
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With this program, we take it seriously, the professional development of Alaska artists, in order to compete in a very competitive process of the public art selection. And I look forward to being in the position to be able to develop that further since I administered that program for 10 years. It seemed like when times were flush, we had little time to work with professional development for artists, and most time was spent dedicated to completion of public art projects, being that PCN was 50% public art and 50% grant management. But over the years, I saw the need for a stronger professional development program that includes mentorship and preparedness for artists who are interested in that business aspect of public art, and their competition in that realm has really advanced, I think, in the last 10 years, but I think we could do more in terms of mentorship and training, and also being able to approach regional corporations to work side by side with those artists who may have the ideas, but would like to learn the skills, the business aspect, and the management of a large project. So I thank you for your comment. I'll continue with my testimony. And speaking about the growth and funding opportunities, the Alaska State Council on the Arts is now in its 51st year, and we're ready for organizational change. The timing of SB 66 is opportune as Alaska's creative industries are growing due to targeted public and private investment in our cultural infrastructure during the past 10 years. As a result, the Alaska State Council on the Arts has experienced rapid growth in grants, programs, and public-private partnerships. We wish to continue this effort, and with the provisions in SB 66, the Alaska State Council on the Arts is poised to continue grant making as a public corporation, but also support new and existing programs to reach more Alaskans with increased impact and efficiency. I was very happy to hear that education as one of our strong programs mentioned by Senator Hughes in her introduction. We also work on local, national, and international levels to oversee projects, initiatives, and policies as well that build capacity for arts organizations, provide practical professional development opportunities for individual artists, and boost students' chances for success through arts in education. SB 66 provides flexibility for the State Council to manage fast-flow projects in a timely manner. And an example of that would be a turnaround project we were approached by a funder to evaluate our education programs, and the expected result was a three-month timeline, and that needed to happen very quickly. And so if we use state procurement for that process, that is an example of how we would experience a slowdown in producing results for our funder. In the past 10 years, our mission has evolved to expand across access to every Alaskan to arts experiences. We have tracked our numbers and serve over 500,000 Alaskans, and our aim, of course, is everyone. I think that license plate project will help with that. Our programs now reach military service members and their families who experience PTSD, incarcerated individuals who want to make a living from their artwork after release, pre-service teachers from rural communities who'd like to teach in the community they live in, Alaskan children and youth who want opportunities to learn through arts and culture. We have been very fortunate that partners with these mutual goals have approached us with these initiatives. SB 66 allows us to be responsive in implementing projects. That affects our performance and the ability for us to secure future private funding. Keeping with our mission, I just really like to stress this, that we are talking about revenue from private sources, but this revenue from funders goes back to Alaskan residents and communities as grants, programs, and resources. And as Mr. Benjamin Brown mentioned earlier, we have lots of ideas on how we can be creative in our program delivery and change with the changing needs of the state, particularly with economic development ties that we've established over the past 5 years. Longstanding partners are in place with the Rasmussen Foundation, the Alaska Arts and Culture Foundation, the Atwood Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. New partners include Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies, with which we have a 10-year agreement, the Siri Foundation and the Alaska Heritage Institute, and those foundations are interested in working on some of the really innovative projects that I mentioned, such as working with incarcerated individuals and their success, ensuring success when they are released. Other partners include the Alaska Humanities Forum, the Western States Arts Federation, and Americans for the Arts, who contribute in-kind support, resources, and funding. And speaking of resources, since taking the role as executive director, I've been tracking the in-kind contributions of our council members because, as you know, we are in lean times, and this is true for all arts organizations, that in-kind is an enormous part of the budgets that we see as we review their operating budgets and grants applications. Organizations in the arts have heavy support through in-kind, and as do we. So I'm really heartened to see how our council members are following suit. For example, the website that was designed for the Alaska License Plate Competition was designed by Mr. Pat Race, one of our Juno Council members, and that has a value. If we were to pay for that service, it would exceed $2,000. We have another council member who is a communications expert and has been able to donate her professional services in writing some of our communications pieces. As you know, with a smaller staff, that part is essential. So we found a way to look at our council members as working members, and their role has been really critical in the past year. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Andre, thank you for joining us in Senate Finance today. With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 66. An act redesignating the Alaska State Council on the Arts as a public corporation. Anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify? Anyone off net or online? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. We are working with legislative finance on the fiscal notes, so we'll hold that conversation for a later date. I would like to advise the committee, if you have recommendations for additions, deletions, or amendments to Senate Bill 66, I'd like amendments in by 5 o'clock on Monday. Is there anything else to come before the committee? On Monday, we have two meetings scheduled for Senate Finance. At 9 a.m., we'll have the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission confirmations and SB 25 Motor Fuel Tax Transportation Maintenance Fund. At 1:30, we'll have the Alaska Gas Development Corporation confirmations and SB 34 Driver's License and ID and the Real ID Act. With that, we're adjourned.